From our nation's capital, this is D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about drug courts. Drug courts seem to have a pretty impressive research history from the U.S. Department of Justice and other sources, essentially stating that people involved in the drug court process do well, better than the people who do not go to drug court. People involved in substance abuse, they go to drug court, they interact with the judge, they interact with supervision staff, and generally speaking, the outcomes are positive. To talk about the program that we have here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, we have two principals with us today, Claralene Clodomir and Amanda Rocha. They're both community supervision officers assigned to our drug court. But before we get into the program, our usual commercial, we are up to 220,000 requests for D.C. Public Safety radio, television, blog, and transcripts. If you need to get in touch with us, and we really appreciate all of the emails, we really appreciate all of the comments and the comment line, and whether it's criticisms or whether it's platitudes, we embrace whatever it is that you had to say to us, and we take it very seriously, and we appreciate all the suggestions in terms of future programs. You can get in touch with me directly via email, Leonard, L-E-O-N-A-R-D, dot Sipes, S-I-P-E-S, at C-S-O-S-A.gov, or you can follow us via Twitter at twitter.com/LenSipes, or you can go to the site itself, www.csosa.gov, and look for the radio and television programs, or you can go to media.csosa.gov directly and take a look at these programs and comment through the comment line. And back to our guests, Claralene Clodomir and Amanda Rocha. Welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Hi, Len.
All right, Claralene, how many times did I butcher that first name? Last name. Claralene Clodomir.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to get the emails saying, Leonard, you cannot pronounce names correctly. Amanda, you've been before our microphones before, correctly?
You've done some other
stuff for us.
Yes, I have.
All right, so you're star of stage and screen.
Oh, no.
And you're very used to the microphone process. Drug courts. You know, ladies, the research on drug courts is positive. Claralene, and the first question is going to go to you. The research is positive. Drug courts do seem to work. Individuals going into the drug court process seem to do fairly well. The whole idea behind, or the history of drug courts for the audience, was to try to provide an alternative to incarceration and an alternative to doing nothing. If you take a look at national research, out of all of the offenders caught up in the criminal justice system, 11% get drug treatment.
Yes.
Now, the overwhelming majority of people caught up in the criminal justice system do not get drug treatment. That's amazing to me. That's amazing to me, considering all the social ills that are out there. But here, what we do is provide drug treatment, and in some cases, we simply provide supervision services. We do whatever is necessary to stabilize that person with a substance abuse history, correct?
You're correct.
All right, tell me about it.
My name is Claralene Clodomir, and I work with the STAR-HIDA team. STAR-HIDA stands for a Sanctioned Team for Addiction Recovery. Our program entails the clients being assigned by either their judge and their attorney, or coming through transfer from other teams at CSOSA, or through our pretrial drug program. Once they come to STAR-HIDA, they are signing a contract stating that there are a number of things that they will and will not do while on probation, and they understand that there's immediate consequences for any positive drug test or non-compliant behavior.
Okay, so if they screw up, there are immediate consequences.
Absolutely.
And that's what seems to work, correctly?
Yeah, it's the blessing and the curse for some of the clients.
Because we need to understand that people with substance abuse histories, shall I say, always screw up. Recovery, you know, the problems are part of the recovery process. Mm-hmm. So it's not go to drug court and never do drugs again.
No,
it's not. Go to drug court and work with that person as that person faces their addiction history and relearns how to live life without drugs.
Yes, and a lot of times when they come to us, they sit and stand up in court before the judge and say, Your Honor, yes, I want to do probation. Your Honor, yes, I want treatment. Then they come to the office and then they reread the contract and realize,
myself involved in?
Yes, it's treatment and sanctions. So if you continue to use drugs, unfortunately, there are jail sanctions involved with your treatment. Tough love all the way.
Tough love all the way. But that's what is necessary, Amanda Rocha, in terms of that sense of tough love, correct?
Yes, absolutely. It really does help to have that median sanctioning because it puts a little fear in the offenders so that they don't go back and use it gives them that second thought before deciding to use, oh, that's 3 nights in jail if I go ahead and do that. Or, oh, you know what, I'm on my fourth sanction or fifth sanction, and now it's 7 nights in jail.
Right.
So they don't want to continue going back and forth. It gets old for them to have to do that, and so kind of helps them along the way a little bit.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand just that because, you know, this whole concept of treatment, the research is pretty clear that the reason why most people don't get drug treatment is not its availability or lack of availability. The principal reason for why people don't get drug treatment is that they don't feel they need drug treatment. And in many cases, in terms of the criminal justice system, we basically coerce them into, A, getting drug treatment, B, sticking with it because of the sanctions along the way. If you have a positive urine, we don't care if it's for marijuana, we don't care what it's for. If you have a positive urine, this is what's going to happen to you, and those punishments, if you will, are going to increase as you continue your substance abuse, correct?
It's the accountability factor. And, you know, a lot of times they come to us never having to be held accountable for their drug use, never had to be held accountable for their actions. And when they come to us, they realize every time they mess up, there is no passes. There are no passes.
Right.
So immediately you go see the judge and you can explain to the judge why you felt it was okay to make this decision regardless of the consequences.
You know, the interesting thing is that there's an increasing number of research programs out there, studies that, interestingly enough, it's the judge who seems to be at the center point of a lot of these mental health courts, substance abuse courts, reentry courts. There's something magical about the judge being involved in this process, I think.
It's their authority. Because if I say he needs treatment and the judge says he needs treatment, that holds a lot of weight.
Right.
You don't want to go to a judge and say, no, he don't need treatment. No, it doesn't work that way. The judge says he needs it, then you're going to listen because they're in the midst of the battle.
Okay. Now, it's extraordinarily confusing for the people of this audience because it goes way beyond Washington, D.C. 20% of our audience is international, and the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area is not our top city in terms of people listening to this program. So we have to explain that under the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, administratively, we have an entity called Pretrial Services who are their own independent agency with their own board and their own mission, but they fall under the generic auspices of the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency. Both are federalized. And they also have a drug court program focusing on pretrial individuals, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and I know you can't speak for them, but in essence, the gig is that the person goes before a judge, and if he completes or she completes the provisions of the drug court program, the charges are dropped.
There's an effect on the charges or what is actually the ending sentence.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. An effect. You should be a public affairs officer. But ours, what we're talking about is post-conviction. We're talking about probationers.
Yes.
Okay. And the probationers, we're talking about the incentive here is early termination. It's where the judge or the attorney feels that this person has a substance abuse background, not necessarily currently doing drugs, but having a substance abuse background. And this person may not be new to the criminal justice system. This person may have multiple arrests and multiple contacts with the criminal justice system, correct?
That is correct. We have people who are 18 years old up, you know, until well into their 60s. So, yeah, it can be, you know, somebody who is their first charge, or it could be somebody who's their 20th.
Right. That process in terms of people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s and older, I've had a chance to encounter them in terms of the ride-alongs that I've done with our folks. And that's sad, don't you think? I mean, when you walk into this apartment of this guy who's been through heroin, who's been through crack, these older heroin addicts, these older coke guys, you know, they just have the hardest time staying away from drugs. It's just amazing to me to go into the home of a 50-year-old and a 60-year-old because they continue to do drugs.
Mm-hmm. Can I go back to the incentive process?
Yeah.
I would say the biggest incentives for our program is the fact that you can come off of drugs and that you can be successful in the community without using illicit substances. We actually have a client right now. He is part of the TAP program, but we also see some of those clients sometimes. And he's working, he's successful, he's drug-free. That is the biggest incentive. Most of our clients, however, see early termination, and that's their goal. And they don't actually think of, to get there, I have to also be drug-free.
Here's my guess, and either one of you feel free to tell me whether I'm right or wrong. My guess is that they think that they're entering this program, and early termination is the only thing that's on their minds.
Yes.
And getting off of drugs is way, 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 way back on the list of
priorities.
Priorities. Because you know, a lot of people, they've done drugs for a good part of their lives.
Yep.
You know, 12, 13 years old starting alcohol, 14, 15 starting marijuana, 16, 17 graduating to the harder drugs. A lot of these individuals that we supervise here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, and this applies to any parole and probation agency in the country, you know, they work with people who don't know how to live life without self-medication.
And unfortunately, in their minds, they believe it's recreational, even though they have a 20-year history of drug abuse and treatment situations. They still believe it's recreational, and I could stop at any point in time.
I can handle this.
And unfortunately, when they get in front of the into the Star Hider program, and there's consequences, and then they realize, well, I'm going to jail because I can't stop using. Is
right.
that really worth it?
Right.
And that's when it may click in their mind. Okay, I really do. I have a problem. I can't do this on my own.
We have this come to reality meeting. I've used other terms, but I don't want to be disrespectful. Where that becomes a defining moment in their lives, does it not? That they have lived their life with a needle, live their life with a powdery substance, live their life smoking reefer. They really don't know what to do without drugs.
And I think, for example, we have somebody assigned to us right now. Her grandmother had a history. Apparently she's not using now, but of use. Her mother is actively using, and she's a young girl, 19 years old, and is using. So that not only has she been using for a good amount of her short life that she has had so far, but she also has been living with this substance abuse through her generations.
Right. I guess that's the point that I'm trying to get across to the audience, because we have this extraordinarily simplistic sense as to the problem that we have with people, the 16,000 of people that we supervise on any given day. And most of the people in the audience that I talk to understand that out of the 7 million people under correctional supervision, 5 of those 7 million are on community supervision. So when we talk about corrections in this country, the overwhelming majority of these individuals are in the community, being supervised in the community. The overwhelming majority of these individuals have substance abuse histories. The overwhelming majority of these individuals just don't smoke a joint every couple weeks. You know, that investment in drugs is a long-term, early age of onset, life-altering experience, but they don't know how to have a life without drugs. So every time the ball skids in their face, they'll smoke a joint. Every time life takes a turn, the needle goes in their arm. That's who they are. That's what they are in terms of their own self-definition. Now, am I exaggerating or am I in the ballpark?
No, that even when they're successful, the way they celebrate is by using drugs.
That's right. They reward themselves. No. We had a case one time when I was with the Maryland Department of Public Safety. Guy comes out of prison, reunited with his family. He's going to drug treatment. He's working. He's getting along with the kids. He's doing so well that what he does is fire up a joint to celebrate.
Yes.
And he kept pulling positives for marijuana. First positive, second positive, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. Now, there's a certain point where we're sitting down and saying, my man, you're very close to going back to prison. And your wife let you come home, and the kids, you're getting along with the kids, and you're working every single day, and you're going to drug treatment, and the drug treatment folks say that you're progressing, and you're within a hair's breadth of going back to the prison system. What's up with you?
Well, I have clients like that right now in my caseload. I had a client who, by some confusion, believed that her termination date was a month earlier. And so when I called her in, I said, I need you to come in and drug test because I'm sorry, you terminate in May instead of April. And that drug test was positive for marijuana. And her explanation was, I thought I was off of probation. She had not tested positive in close to seven months.
But that's not the point. That's not the point. The criminal justice system, in essence, in these drug courts or other modalities that we have here at CSOSA, when we involve people in long-term residential group substance abuse, that is, for the first time in their lives, many of these individuals come face-to-face with the prospect of never using drugs again and facing the prospect as to why they use drugs to begin with. That is a pretty scary place to be, is it not?
I would think so, yeah. Some of the offenders have already had drug treatment, though, you know, and this is their second time coming around because, like you were saying, it is a scary thought. So maybe that first time they weren't open to it. They didn't really reap the full benefits of receiving that treatment. So here they are back in the criminal justice system, and we're giving them another chance,
right?
We're hoping that this time they are receptive, and they do keep that open mind, and they aren't so put off by the whole idea of addressing that issue.
We're halfway through the program, ladies and gentlemen. This is DC Public Safety. Today we're talking about drug courts. We have two principals with us. We have Carlene. Let's see if I can actually pronounce Carlene's last name correctly. Clodomir and Amanda Rocha, both community supervision officers with drug court. Again, there are two drug courts in the District of Columbia, ours under the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, which is post-adjudication, which means the person's on probation, and we also have one on the pretrial side of it. And the whole idea is when the judge or the attorney takes a look at this individual's background, they say that this person's involvement in criminal activity is principally due to substance abuse. And that person may not be a newbie to the criminal justice system. This may be the person's fifth, sixth, seventh, 12th time. But he has a substance abuse history. She has a substance abuse history. And what we try to do is to get them involved in treatment. But the interesting part of it is that treatment may not be the first stop, correct? We assess the individual.
When they come into the HADA drug program, initially, some clients are actually already in treatment continuum from either pretrial or from a request from their judge. A lot of our clients come in and we assess their current drug test to see what level they would actually go into.
Right.
Some clients come in and never drug test positive, and they had dealt with their issues prior to coming to
Or they make the voluntary decision
to stop
as long as they're under supervision. Mm-hmm. So the interesting part of it, this is the point I was trying to get to when both of you were looking at me so wide-eyed. The interesting part of it is research years ago that basically said offenders take vacations from their drug use all the time. There's a certain point where even the person involved in substance abuse will say, I'm doing it too much. I need my wife or my significant other, or for whatever reason I'm going to be drug tested. I've got to stop for the next 3 or 4 months. And then oftentimes the person goes right back to it. So this sense of a uncontrollable craving for drugs, that craving is always there, but the person can stop for a certain amount of time.
It depends on the person, but yes, sometimes we do have clients who may have tested positive 3 or 4 times at the very beginning, or maybe never, and then complete their whole probation with no positive drug test.
Right.
But then we'll see them later on in court, and they got another charge, and they tested positive at some other point after they leave the Start HIDA program.
So the criminal justice system has the wherewithal, and mothers have the wherewithal, and pardon my sexism, wives have the wherewithal. And in the case of women offenders, husbands have the wherewithal. People who have a certain amount of power regarding the offender, have the ability to get that offender to stop doing drugs, at least for a certain amount of time.
Specifically when the consequences of the is jail time. A lot of our clients, after they sit and do their first sanction, which is the jury box sanction for 3 days, and they see the judge stepping back client after client after client for a positive drug test for 3 nights or 7 nights or 14 nights or 28 nights, they look at that and say, oh, I'm not going to do 28 nights for a positive marijuana. Oh, I could stop for...
That's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that the point? I mean, it's like we have these endless debates about substance abuse and what works and what doesn't work. Well, holding a 28-day setback, as we refer to it, as spending 28 days in jail for smoking a joint, seems to be an awfully heavy price to pay. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these individuals under our supervision consciously make the choice not to continue to smoke marijuana because they simply don't want to spend 28 days in jail, correct?
Correct, but the flip side is those who actually are in the grips of their addiction, no matter how many sanctions you provide, they're not going to stop. And those that are hard, the ones we really try to focus on and really try to get them out of the community immediately, because every time they pick up, they're breaking the law and they're violating their probation contract and they are violating probation and they're hurting themselves and may become a threat to the community. So we try to get them out of the community as fast as we can through treatment.
All right, and in some cases through residential treatment.
Yes.
Okay, so let's walk through those steps, those sanction steps, because we have sitting in the jury box for 3 days, mm-hmm. which is a real pain.
First violation.
Right. Okay, second violation.
It's going to be 30 days on GPS with the SESO conference.
Okay, so 30 days being tracked electronically mm-hmm. through global positioning systems, satellite tracking, so wherever you go, you're tracked.
With a curfew. And sometimes a stay-away order. I mean, you can't go to the neighborhood where you usually get your drugs from.
There you go.
We know where you are.
There you go. So he's being watched all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Now, the next sanction after that?
Third sanction is 3 nights in jail.
3 nights in jail in the D.C. jail.
D.C. jail.
Well, that's a lovely place to visit. What's it, on the weekend, or in the week?
Whenever they get their sanction.
It's whenever they get
it
their sanction.
Immediately.
Okay. Fourth?
Would be case staffing. So Ms. Clodomir and I or our supervisor or other team members get together and discuss this individual's case to see what we can do at this point, because in the past what has been going on isn't working.
Okay.
So a plan, in a sense.
Is that where you give your Riot Act pronouncement to the individual, basically saying, hey, you're this far from going in the prison?
They've been getting it the whole time.
Oh, there you go.
And we tell our clients when they come in, if we get to the case staffing stage, please understand you're leaving the community and going to treatment. There is no... Can I get one more chance? No, your chance was when you stood in front of the judge and said you would be clean and sober.
And there is a certain point where we will send them away to residential treatment.
That's the case staffing stage.
Okay. After that, what happens?
Then we have the 7 nights in jail sanction.
Okay. And then it just basically goes from the 7 nights to 14 nights to an entire month, that sort of thing.
That's right. And if somebody gets placed in residential treatment and gets discharged unsuccessfully or voluntarily chooses to leave, then that would be 15 nights in jail.
The average person listening to this program, the people within the criminal justice system are going to say, that's pretty much common business. Drug positives and sanctions. The average person outside of the criminal justice system listening to this program would be appalled. They're going, how many positives, how many bites at the apple are you giving this guy? You're telling me that he's got 15 prior contacts with the criminal justice system, and now we're up to our fifth and sixth drug positive. For the love of good God, put that person in prison. Obviously, that person doesn't want to comply. Obviously, that person is posing a public safety risk. Just put them back in prison.
But see, you look at the context of the situation. The average individual on probation actually provide a number more of positive drug tests, are a lot more noncompliant. We get them immediately after the first, second, third, fourth, fifth. So in the context of probation, sometimes a client won't be able to go in front of their sentencing judge until the 20th plus drug test, because we can't get a show cause until then to tell the judge he is noncompliant with probation.
Okay, but that's a technicality, and I'm glad you brought that up. But the principal issue here for the average citizen is, you know, the people that we have under supervision are not exactly the most popular people on the face of the earth.
No, you know? But they are your neighbors.
Well, that's a good point. That's a mm-hmm. good point. But the other point is that, you know, when we go out to citizens asking them to support, whether it's mental health programs or substance abuse programs or educational programs or vocational programs, the response oftentimes is, well, Leonard, we're going to give to the church. We're going to give to the schools. Let the money go to the kids. Let the money go to the elderly. You know, I am really not all that enthused about giving criminals, you know, money for programs. So the point is that there is a frustration level and a tolerance level on the part of the average citizen as to how many chances we're going to give that individual from the standpoint of public safety. Mm-hmm. And we need to explain why we do that.
Public safety is our number one concern. So we always talk to our clients in regards from the aspect. When you become a threat to public safety, then you need to leave the community.
That's right.
But up until that point, we have to work with you because once you leave probation, you're done with this. You go back into that same community because you don't walk around with a sign saying, I am a criminal. You walk around into those churches, into those schools, pick up your children, those same places that the public doesn't want to provide their money. Those clients are there with them.
One out of 45 individuals, according to national research, are on probation right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or community supervision. Now, if you count, these are active. So if you count people who have been caught up in the criminal justice system, it's at least one out of 20. Mm-hmm. So every time, regardless of where you go, where you shop, you're going to encounter hundreds of individuals who have been caught up in the criminal justice system. So I think the rationale is that we want them to quit drugs. We want them to become taxpayers, not tax burdens. Mm-hmm. Right. We want them to stop criminality. And I think that's what we try to do with these individuals on drug court.
That's right. We want them to make that lifestyle change so they're not back in and out
right.
of the system.
We want them to toss off substance abuse for good.
That's right.
And stop messing with us.
Sometimes it doesn't happen in one try. I have sat in drug court and did my cases in drug court and have turned to the left and looked into the jury box and saw a client I had a year ago
That's
who
right.
got off early termination
That's exactly
and who is
right.
now back on pretrial.
That's exactly right. And it is the process of recovery. And when I do live talk radio, people have a hard time listening to this because their sense of the criminal justice system is you're getting a break, buddy. And maybe one, maybe two, but you hit three and I want you to go back to prison. I think the average person in the larger community, not in the criminal justice system, feels that way. So we have to be accountable to the average citizen and explain to them that recovery in terms of substance abuse is a messy process that takes, in many cases, 2-3 times a treatment, and in many cases involves multiple positives for drugs until we can convince that person to stay away from drugs at least for the period of their supervision or go to jail.
I have a client who has been on probation since 1995.
Mm-mm-mm.
And he has been through every team at CSOSA. And when he finally made it to Star Hyder and he started messing up and we did the warrant initiatives and we went to his home and arrested him and we brought him in front of his judge. His judge said, nope, we're going to give him one more chance. And that is it, one more chance. And it just continues on. But I will say that after this last opportunity, he has been clean and sober for 7 to 8 months, is working full time, and now he is, you know, is back part of society. But see, it didn't work the first, second, third, 10th, 15th time.
You know, the interesting part of this is that the average person hearing it has a low frustration level for people caught up in the criminal justice system, but that is our reality.
Mm-hmm.
Our reality is that we have individuals who don't know how to live life without a needle.
Yeah.
They don't know how to live life without a hallucinogen. They don't know how to do it. And what we do is we teach them how to live life without using drugs. And that creates a much safer society, a much saner society in the long run. And we turn people who are tax burdens into taxpayers.
Yes.
And I think that's the heart and soul of it. It's messy. It's sloppy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to explain to the general public, but we take individuals who are problems and we turn out individuals who are no longer problems. And we do that more often than we don't, correct?
And sometimes we're the only ones who hold up that mirror to that individual and make them see how sloppy and messy they are. And they have been living their life, and hold them accountable. And then when they think they're almost done, hold them accountable even more and make them be the successes that they say they want to be when they first came to probation.
It's a fascinating process. Most of the people that I've encountered after a certain point, especially the older guys, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. They are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is just a terrible process of being arrested and rearrested and rearrested and reincarcerated and reincarcerated. These aren't necessarily violent criminals. Most of these people are involved in nonviolent crimes. But there's a certain point where they just get sick and tired of being constantly put through the criminal justice system. And they finally quit. They finally make that break. So I think what you're doing is intervening in that process earlier, if at all humanly possible, to get them to that point where they understand that they're sick and tired of being sick and tired, correct?
Well, and also think about the example that I gave before where this young adult has this generational, you know, substance abuse that she's been around. And those people who have dropped out of school in the sixth grade or who have all these different issues and they're using to kind of, you know, make themselves feel better about the issue, or they're trying to fit in with their peers or with their family. So you have all these issues that are going on, and part of probation's job is to address those issues, you know, get them into an employment training program, get their GED. So now that they have these positive things in their life that they didn't have before, that would help them to stop using or even wanting to go back and use.
Or put them back in jail or prison, and either one protects public safety.
Yes.
That's the bottom line. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time. Carlene Clatomir, and I said it for the first time correctly, community supervision officer with our drug court unit. Amanda Rocha, also a community supervision officer with our drug court unit. You can find information about CSOSA at www.csosa.gov. You can also access the radio, television shows, the blog, and transcripts through the CSOSA website or directly through www.media.csosa.gov. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/LenSipes, and you can also email me directly, Leonard, leonard.sipes@csosa.gov. Ladies and gentlemen, I want everybody to have themselves a very, very pleasant day.